please. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jeff Sald. I represent Mr. Watlington. This case involves the interpretation of two statutes in Virginia. Both of them involve uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage. The case involving Mr. Watlington primarily involves underinsured motorist coverage. The two issues before Your Honors is what constitutes a renewal versus a new policy. As near as I can tell, this is a novel issue. This court has danced around it in a number of cases, Geico versus Hall, the Alexander case, and some others, but never really addressed the issue. When is a policy that is issued in a sequence after an existing policy considered a new policy or a renewal policy, as those terms are used in the code? One of the distinguishing features of the case before this court is that we are not dealing with precatory language, but mandatory language. Geico versus Hall, a case cited by the court and by ACE Insurance Company, involved the 20-day requirement that an individual insured respond within 20 days under Title 38.2-2202. And the court essentially held that it was precatory language, it was not an essential component, and could be waived by a course of dealing between the parties. It could be waived by the insurer if it chose to do so.
Counsel, but,
yes, sir.
I want to leave the precatory ether and get right down to the nitty-gritty.
Yes, sir.
Why was this, and the issue, one of the issues is renewal. Why was this a nine-month policy?
Your Honor, it was not part of the record. It was never explained during the course of the trial. The three or four policies that had been issued from, I think it was 2004, on an annual basis, 12/31/04 to 12/31/05, 12/31/06, 12/31/07. This accident, of course, occurred in 2008. In 2007, it's an anomaly. Instead of an annual policy, actually the policy was written for a full year, and then in October, without explanation, there was a renegotiation of the policy.
But
and an increase in the premium by $32,000, which was about almost 13% of the total premium, without explanation. There's no history in the record to explain that.
But isn't that really the critical fact for one side or the other, depending upon the rationale?
I believe it is for a couple of different reasons.
You'd say it's the critical fact for the other side.
Well, I think it's a critical factor in the analysis of the case, Your Honor. The court in Elliott, cited by the trial court, that was tried before Judge Clark in the federal court in Eastern District of Virginia and subsequently appealed, relied on the definition of renewal in a different, it's a section that defines renewal, but it's not in the automotive section, but still provides some guidance as to the legislative intent. And it defines renewal as a policy superseding at the end of a policy period a policy previously issued and delivered. This policy in October of 2007 certainly did not supersede an existing policy at the end of the term. We respectfully submit that the trial court overlooked that. While the trial court relied on the definition of renewal, it overlooked the fact that a statute says superseding at the end of a policy period. So if we're relying on that definition, the October policy certainly didn't comply, October of 2007.
Well, counsel, let's talk about that for just a second, because the original term was 12 months, ending at the end of December, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And this policy started in October to December.
Well, it actually started in January, and in October it was revived.
No, I know. I'm talking about the three-month policy.
Oh, yes,
started in October.
Yes.
Okay, so it overlapped the old policy by 3 months?
Well,
October, November, December.
It's interesting, Your Honor. In October, they changed the policy. They gave it a new policy number. They described it as the old one as an expiring policy.
But, I mean, what I'm trying to figure out is with this superseding at the end of the policy period. I mean, you just made the conclusory statement that that's not what happened here.
Well, the original policy was a one-year term running from December 31st to December 31st. And so this policy, which was renegotiated for reasons not provided in the record, interrupted the full policy period with renegotiated terms, increased premiums, and other changes. So in, at least in my mind, Your Honor, if it interrupts the policy term, the original policy term, it can't supersede at the end of the policy term.
I'm trying to figure out how it supersedes at the end in any event.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that in customary insurance policies that we'd all be familiar with, for example, on my own auto policy, it runs from, say, January to January. And at the end of that January term, it's typically rolled over and extended. You pay a slightly different premium for the next year unless there are material changes. So a renewal policy incorporates, submit to the court, basically the same policy, usually the same policy number, perhaps with a different suffix on the end. But this case, it's interesting because ACE claims that the policy itself says renewal. But it's a classic definition of an oxymoron, because if you look at the same page, it says renewal, and then on the same line it says expiring policy with a totally different number. So ACE claims, on the one hand, this is a renewal policy at the end of the normal terms, and on the other hand, their own policy references the fact that it is an expiring policy.
Isn't looking at the number the elevating form over substance? Now, I understand your argument, and I'm giving credence to your argument, but whether it's got a new number or the same old number really is dealer's choice, is it not?
Your Honor, I would agree with you, except that I think that is one part of the puzzle. If we are looking for whether this is a new policy or an expiring policy, if that was the only change, I would agree with you 100%, sir. But that wasn't the only change.
But I'm just simply saying, I just don't think the number matters.
Well, I respectfully disagree. I think it's one component of how we would analyze whether this is a new policy or not, where ACE claims it can rely solely on the term renewal stamped on the front of the policy. That same policy says expiring. So is it a renewal, which is a continuation of the same basic terms, or is it a new policy? And that's really the issue for this court, whether it is a material substantial change or whether it's a continuation of basically the same processes. And those cases that we cited...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
But that's right.
You kept on going, so I couldn't
I'm
get
sorry.
A chance to question in. I'm looking at 38.2-2212, which is the code section where you get the definition for renewal that you want us to apply. And it's interesting to me that the title of that is Grounds and Procedures for Cancellation of or Refusal to Renew Motor Vehicle Insurance Policies and Review by the Commissioner.
It is, Your Honor.
That's not at all what we're dealing with here.
No, it's not. It's the only definition I have found in the Virginia Code.
But that's purely for consumers, I believe, isn't it, that code section?
Your Honor, I don't have it. I can't answer the question.
I'm not going to agree that that's what it's for.
I can say that the court in the Elliott case, Judge Clark's case that went up to the Fourth Circuit, relied on the definition of renewal as instructive, as helpful. I would have to agree that it is not determinative, but in the absence of any other definition by the legislature, I suggest to the court that that provides some guidance as to what the legislature
Well, let me ask you a different question. You started talking about the practical effect of renewals, and you talked about your own insurance policy, and I certainly have had a lot of experience with the insurance policies over the years, and I've got two children, I've added cars and taken cars off. But it's always treated as the same policy. It's always treated as a renewal all through all those years, even though I've changed coverages, I've changed what's on the policy. Certainly the premiums have gone up and down as my children became 25 and then got married and left home.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think this issue has been brought to this court before, and particularly in the context of a commercial policy where here, as in the case dealing with Johns Manville, the White case, we're dealing with a commercial policy. It's not just renewed. The evidence before this court was that every year ACE would submit a proposal to Terminix. Terminix would then consider it, and they would negotiate back and forth. That was the testimony of Mr. Hall. And they would decide on what the terms were going to be. So it was not just a renewal in the consumer context. This was a negotiation process where A submits new proposals, they negotiate back and forth, and then a binder is issued that was introduced as an exhibit. And then following the binder, a policy was issued. We have
Well, so they've done all this negotiation. Why do they need the protection of 2202, 38.2-2202, and 2206?
You're right.
Why do they need that protection?
They
know what they're getting. They know what they're paying for.
Yes, sir. I think the answer to that question is the legislative decision that this is a default provision under 38.2-2206. That the legislature has made the determination that a policy of insurance that is on a new policy, a new policy, must not the precatory language, but must afford the insurance coverage equal to the liability limits for the UM case. And it was very well put by the court. By the Fourth Circuit in the White case, they said the only issue was whether the default provisions of the code apply. Information that supports an inference by the insurer that the insured intends to reject a default level of coverage, that's what the legislature has done in 2206, does not suffice as an actual rejection. The statute's plain language explicitly required Manville to reject the default coverage by notifying National Union. Furthermore, the law's explicit rejection is consistent with its purpose of affording adequate protection to those injured by uninsured motorists. So if the default provision is the legislature wants insurers to have the opportunity, or if the legislature's default position is that the liability limits and the UM limits are going to be the same, mandatorily, unless they are rejected. That takes us then to the question, is this a new policy? And if it's a new policy, that form was required. Now, there was a stipulation that it was not included in the October policy. And the subsequent policy term, when this accident happened in 2008, there was a form attached. It was properly signed, but there was no election. And that takes us clearly to the White case, because it was an insufficient rejection. We have a new policy by definition, if we use by analogy the term the legislature used. We have a new policy given the multiple changes, negotiating process in this commercial setting. Your Honor, if I may, Your Honors, I'd like to reserve the balance for rebuttal.
All right, thank you.
May it please the Court, Ted Yocum, I represent Ace Insurance. In this case, Your Honor, I think you got it exactly right. This policy is a multi-state policy. It was insuring that the testimony was there was 551 vehicles on the road. So there was, and it was in effect in a number of other jurisdictions. So at any given time, cars would be coming off that policy, going on to that policy. As state legislatures would hand down new regulations that related to the policy, there'd be riders that would be applicable to the policy, and I think I pointed that out, as did the trial court. I don't think that under any scenario the Ace Insurance or Terminix ever considered this a new policy. And I think that's important. I think this court in the Geico case, which I believe is controlling on this issue, said you can the court in that case look to the dealing of the parties. Now, if you combine that with the testimony of the CEO of Terminix, who was present at the trial, he had testified that Terminix had had a problem in the past where an employee had filed a workers' comp claim, and then also recovered under their underinsured motorist coverage. And Terminix was keen to avoid that situation where an employee was essentially double-dipping under their insurance coverage. That's exactly the case here. As pointed out in the brief...
Counsel, was GEICO a situation where there was a true renewal, where no one questioned whether there was a renewal?
Well,
my read of GEICO?
I think it was a renewal.
Right, GEICO, there was no question in GEICO that it was a renewal. The question was whether by sending this form, they somehow obligated the insurer to...
I agree with that.
Is that the case? So, but the question here, before we get to GEICO, is whether this was a new policy or whether it was a renewal. Don't we have to answer that question before we say the intent of GEICO would apply?
I agree. Okay. And if the court is persuaded that what I have described as minor changes to the policy somehow renders that that relationship, it severs that relationship between the insured and the insurer, and somehow that makes the policy a new one, then that is a different scenario.
Counsel, when I look at the course of dealing and particularly the chart showing the differences each year, they are, in fact, de minimis changes for the most part, and which benefits you. Except when I look at the course of dealing, I'm looking at every single policy being for a calendar year, except the policy in effect when this incident took place.
Well, as Your Honor correctly...
Answer the three-month question, if you can, based upon the record.
It's actually in the record, but I would offer that it really doesn't matter whether the policy was for a calendar year or for 3 months.
Well, to this justice, it matters. Because every single time you come to the end of a calendar year and a policy expires of its own terms, and then a new one comes up, and again, whether it's a renewal or whether it's a brand new policy is in part going to depend upon the course of dealings. But there's a course of dealing every year that's going to happen, except for this year. And there's an anomaly, and the anomaly is quite relevant.
Well, I would argue that it is not, Your Honor, because if you look at all of the policies that were entered into the record, each renewal policy contained the policy number that was expiring and the new policy number that would be for that applicable period. So to ACE's way of thinking, it doesn't matter that the parties contracted for a renewal that only lasted a few months. Whether it lasted a year or a few months, it became a renewal policy during that period. And then when that expired, it was renewed again, as counsel correctly pointed out. So I don't think that the time limitation that this happens to be a shorter period is definitional. And I would argue that, and I'm in agreement with counsel, that I think that the language of 38.2212 is helpful to the court. Because if you look at the policies that are here, It seems to me that it meets that definition. Now, I understand Your Honor indicated that it's not really germane to this issue, but it is helpful. And if you look at those policies, it's the same limits of liability. It's the same underinsured amount. It's the there's no lapse. One is replacing the other. Which is entirely consistent with a new renewal policy.
It's not at the end of a policy period, is it, counsel?
Well, it is because the parties contracted that it would be. By that,
not on January 1st, they didn't.
Well, this is why I say that just because parties enter into a contract of insurance for a time period, and then for whatever business reasons enter into another renewal policy, it just replaces that. It steps in the shoes of that policy. It doesn't make it a new policy.
So you're saying the policy ends when we say it ends?
Yes,
despite
I think
the term we negotiated.
Yes, because the parties negotiated that this would be the next renewal policy, even though it's a truncated time frame. So I don't think that that is a tripwire at all in this case. It doesn't change the nature of what these parties understood was a renewal policy.
So your position would be that superseding at the end of the policy period would include any day before the last day that the policy was effective, the former policy?
Yes, ma'am. At that point, when it became effective, that became the next in the series of renewal policies. And that would have terminated the old policy period, just as if it would have happened on January 1st.
So if there had been a lapse of coverage for a month for whatever reason, the new policy that was issued a month later would not be a renewal?
I don't think it would be. I think that might be an entirely different situation. And I think then it would require the completed selection form.
When I read the trial court's letter opinion, it seems to me that the trial court, you know, considered an approach where you look at the policy where there was a material change and concluded that that creates uncertainty. So the trial court decided to rely on 38.1.2.2.12 as determinative, using that definition, and let that definition define whether a policy was or wasn't a renewal policy. Is that a correct approach in your view, to let that definition be the determinative test as to whether it's renewal?
Well, I think it's helpful, and if the changes to the policy counsel alerted this court to, both in brief and here today, if they were of a material nature to the issue before the court, then I think it would be different. Under these circumstances...
Even though it might meet this definition.
Yes, ma'am. I think under these minor changes that were not germane, that was persuasive to the court. And so I think that the court correctly determined that definition would be preferable.
Why wouldn't these changes be material? If you're looking at a materiality standard, there's an increase of $32,000 in premium, which I didn't do the math. The council says it's 13%. I'll accept that. It added an income loss benefits coverage, which unfortunately I can't find anywhere in the appendix, so I don't know if that's a big deal or not.
I would offer that's not germane.
How would I know that if I'm trying to determine this material?
Well, I'm not sure. Given the fact that it's not before Your Honor, I don't want to answer that question. Other than to say that the issue that was raised in this case was pretty simple. Was Mr. Watlington entitled to underinsured motorist coverage?
Well, I understand the issue, but it seems to me, counsel, we either look, well, I guess we could take a different approach, but the two that have been offered to us are one, that we use the definition of renewal in 2212, or we look at whether it's a material change. If there is a change and the change is not in the record, how can this court determine whether it's a material change? That's my question.
Well, again, not having it before the court.
What's the it that's not before the court?
That material, income, the change in the income benefit. It is not before the court. That record was not offered, so I can't really address what's not there. I would offer that it was not an issue raised at trial. And I guess that's what I'd have to say about that. I don't have anything further. I thank you. Well, maybe I should say this. If the court looks at the totality of all the policies, I think it's abundantly clear that ACE and Terminix understood that Terminix had selected the state minimum underinsured motorist coverage. I'd ask the court to take judicial notice of that code section 46.2 472, and that state minimum is 25.50.20. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please, court. I would submit at the outset that because this policy changed in October of 2007, first, we do not meet the definition of renewal. It's the legislature used it in another context. And secondly, the changes in that policy in October were material and substantial, and they certainly did not fall within the ambit of the cases like the Elliott case, where there was a simple increase in premium, and that was the only change, and it was at the end of a policy term. Or many of those cases, which we cited in our brief from other states, where the changes were incidental to the coverage. Those cases in Florida, Illinois, Washington, New Mexico, Oregon, Oklahoma, and Delaware, among those that we cited, are looking for more substantial changes than simply a change in a policy number or a change in a particular coverage or perhaps even the addition of another motor vehicle, which many cases have held are not substantial and material. But here we have a litany of changes. The combination between the definition that the legislature has used in another insurance context and the litany of changes made to this policy, we respectfully submit are fatal. Whether we look at one or whether we adopt the other, either one we submit supports the conclusion, inescapable conclusion, that the October policy is a not a renewal in the context that the legislature considered. And that required and triggered a rejection, an opportunity to reject the higher premiums. That was not done in October by stipulation. The form was never provided. And then when the next policy was issued in January of 2008 that covers the date of this accident, there was a rejection form submitted, but that rejection form was incomplete, made no designation. And under the White case, which I respectfully submit should not be hastily discarded, that case clearly held that if it is if a rejection form is submitted and incomplete, it's ineffective because the legislature's default position is going to be that the UM limits are going to match the liability limits unless properly rejected. ACE did not, neither ACE nor Terminix properly rejected it during the policy period when this accident occurred, and because of those changes, we're dealing with a new policy. I would just like to say I appreciate the court's hearing this case. It's an interesting case because it does seem to present a novel issue which has broader implications than just Mr. Watlington, and those implications are widespread, and we appreciate the court's willingness to consider it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.